Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:47, and that is Pacific Summer Time. Well, the Greek drama, melodrama, tragedy, whichever way you want to call it, continues to unfold. But the stock market is no longer responding to it, which would really suggest that the power of this continued indecision to affect investor interests has really exhausted itself, and that you would need to have a surprise outcome in that the Greeks would choose to leave the euro over the weekend in order to really be manifested in terms of stock market reaction. And just to put that in perspective, that the FTSE was down today by about 0.8%, but the DAX was up 0.17, the IBEX was up a bit, the European bank sector was up off its high. And I think that was probably characteristic of the majority of European indices, in that they were up, but that they didn't close at their highs, because we just have this continued indecision. You're probably as tired of it as everybody else is, and the reality is that we simply have to have the patience and the humility to allow the market to unfold as it's going to. And our frustration or our impatience is not going to matter to the market one way or the other. The other big things that were happening this week is that China pulled back very, very sharply. That's particularly true of the mainland markets, and perhaps even more particularly true of the Shenzhen market, which is the home of a number of the smaller high-growth technology-led companies. The Chinex index has got a PE of 98, and that's following a pretty sharp decline over the last 2 weeks. It rallied incredibly powerfully for the last 6 months, not least because that equity options have just been allowed, but were only begun trading in the market in February. Well, the opening up of equity derivatives in the market has obviously helped to push the market higher, and the withdrawal of margin or the closing out of positions is resulting in a very sharp pullback. Well, until earlier this week, we could have said that there was the potential that we could have had a range in consolidation, which would have allowed the overbought condition relative to the MA to be closed. But the very sharp pullback in here today, with more than half of the shares down their daily limit and an additional 12 of the 100 have had their trading halted, really does suggest that and it closed at the low of the day, suggests that this is a pretty concerted unwind of leverage, and that a period of support building is going to be required in order to rebuild confidence. And there's no guarantee that this high growth index is going to find support in the region of the moving average, that we're going to be, quite a bit of evidence is going to be required here. And it is the Chinex index that is registering the vast majority of the news headlines. But it is worth pointing out that it is certainly not the only index. If one were to look, for example, at the banking sector, then the valuations are much more conservative. When you look at the chart patterns, you don't have the same degree of just massive overextension. I think the Shenzhen index was up in the order of 150% since January. So, you know, that's really quite incredible. To the extent that some people were saying that it was a bubble that had developed in China, well, that's only partially true. Did the very high growth small cap companies have bubblish characteristics? Yes. Does the wider market have bubblish characteristics? Well, it certainly got way overextended, but the A-share index, which would be representative of the large cap companies and state-owned enterprises, doesn't really have these bubblish characteristics that have, after the just incredibly impressive breakout, the PE is now 21, and it was at 10 a year ago. So we've had a doubling in the stock market, and now we're getting some unwind of that really very extreme short-term overbought condition. What we'll be looking for is signs of relative strength, that just about everything rallied and a lot of things got really overextended. The things that now exhibit relative strength will be those that have a real story behind them, that they weren't just rallying because of abundant liquidity and massive leverage, but that they're capable of holding their advances or they're capable of bottoming early. Well, leaders tend to lead in both directions, and leaders lead for a reason. And, of course, the reason would be that they're leveraged to something other than just the return of the domestic investor. Some of the things that are starting to now show relative strength, for example, Aluminium Corp of China got first step above the base characteristics. It didn't rally really for any to any great extent over the last 3 months, and it's now at the lower side of its range. There are a number of other companies in a similar situation, that the most recent part of the rally bypassed them. It will now be interesting to see whether they exhibit relative strength. On Wall Street today, the S&P 500 was pretty much unchanged, and the Nasdaq was down just a bit less than 2/3%. The Dow Jones was in positive territory. Well, we've had a pretty inert environment on Wall Street for really much of the year. At least part of the reason for that is because the Fed ended its quantitative easing program. There was this incredibly tight correlation between the S&P 500 and the size of the Fed's balance sheet. The Fed's balance sheet has been ranging with a very mild downward bias, and the S&P 500 has been pretty inert for much of the year. Mergers and acquisitions activity has certainly picked up. That just this week, if all you have to do is look at the headlines, and health insurers are competing with each other. Procter & Gamble is buying Coty. And there's just a string of additional mergers and acquisition news stories. Well, generally speaking, the market tends to like that. But what it's also indicative of is that you have companies rushing to borrow as much money as they can while rates are low. There are signs that wages are improving, that the purchasing manager index is surprising to the upside, and government bond yields are beginning to price in interest rate hikes. Well, the 30-year was weaker today by almost 2 additional full points. That's now below 150. The 10-year was weaker by about 19 ticks. The 10-year yield has broken a progression of lower rally highs evident over the last year. It's held a progression of higher reaction lows, and its reactions have been less than 50 basis points for about the last 4 months. And nothing has happened yet to question potential for a retest of that really long-term progression of lower rally highs, which is in the order of 3%. Well, that's where we're going to be asking very big questions. This was an incredibly active week in terms of the news flow, but what happens in the government bond market is probably more important than just about anything else, because just about everything is priced off the 10-year. Well, 10-year yields are rising, and that's a short-term move. They're rising from very low levels, and they're rising from a retest of their earlier low. And this is type 3 bottoming activity, particularly if you look at it over the long term and on a logarithmic scale chart, that yields have been ranging now for a number of years, and that the long term progression of lower rally highs remains intact. Well, considering that this is a type 3 bottom, which would be characterized by ranging time and size, well, the size element is the really big one here, because the extent of the range is in excess of 100% from bottom to top. And it means that whereas the low might be less than 1.5%, the upper side of the range is about 3%. And a sustained move above 3% would be required to really put meat on the argument that the bull market in US treasuries is over. Well, we've obviously been early in this previously, and there is still a great deal of argument as to exactly what's going to happen. But what we've had is massive increases in supply. And that's characteristic of every bull market. Obviously, there is no better time to increase the supply of whatever it is the bull market is in than when prices are high. And prices are without doubt high. All you have to do is look at the futures price. That the 30-year is just now trading below 150. But those are for bonds that mature at par. Well, that's a significant premium. And it's only really a premium that can be justified in a deflationary type of environment. Well, wages are beginning to rise, and that's something that really does move the needle for the Fed. What's an additional consideration is that this is an El Nino year, and what we've already seen is that there have been a wetter than normal spring and early summer in much of the Midwest in the US, and that's beginning to manifest in higher corn, wheat, and soybean prices, and indeed cotton. Well, it isn't. There are conflicting reports coming out of India as to just how strong the monsoon is going to be. And generally speaking, an El Nino results in pretty dry conditions in Australia. Well then, is there the potential for commodity price inflation in foodstuffs to become more of a factor? We haven't had that in a while. And in fact, food prices have been pretty low for the last number of years following bumper crops. But if we have wages and higher yields, well, we might also have higher soft commodity prices in the equation as well. Well, the Fed will act if it is if inflation is likely to get out of hand, but it probably won't be aggressive in acting until it does, for the simple reason that they've invested an incredible amount of time, money, and political capital in engineering the recovery such as we've seen so far, and they can't really do anything to put that in danger. To do anything to put it in danger would be simply be schizophrenic. So even if rates start to rise, there is every chance that they're going to be behind the curve in terms of the inflationary bias. Well, Europe is starting to price in the potential that this is nothing more than a mean reversion within the context of a major bull market. And Europe has a great deal of catch-up potential relative to Wall Street in that they've only really started with their quantitative easing in the last 3 months, and it's going to last at least another year and a half. Well, there is nothing to say that it won't persist beyond that, and not least if Greece stays in the Eurozone, then the requirement for continued monetary easing will be that much more powerful. When we tend to think about this in the long term, then we're moving through a period of time where the US is gradually beginning to normalize interest rates. We haven't had the first move just yet, but they're not going to go any lower from here. That China has engineered a stock market recovery, and now we're getting the first step and correction within that in the context of that move, but that they have a larger balance sheet in terms of the central bank than the USA does, that they're slowly but surely removing headwinds from the property sector in order to stave off a crash, and that monetary policy is easing. So while we're Well, I guess the way to think about it is that there's about $15 trillion in central bank balance sheets. And the Fed is probably going to follow the Bank of England in rolling over its debt, and the size of the balance sheet will probably remain pretty staid over the next couple of years. Well, then, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and the People's Bank of China are all increasing liquidity, and that's generally pretty benign for stock markets. We would say then that the normalization of interest rates and higher yields is coming at in a very benign environment, that it would be appropriate for interest rates to rise somewhat. It means that for the wider economy, that's probably relatively good news, but for the types of companies that have been totally reliant on access to free liquidity, well, they're probably going to run into trouble. Well, then you would look at, when does all of the debt that has been taken out over the last few years need to be rolled over? And it's really not until 2018 and 2019. And there's almost nothing needs to be rolled over in 2015. You're probably not going to have any kind of big problem in terms of high yield until a lot of the debt that's been taken out over the last few years needs to be rolled over. And at that point, yields are probably going to be quite a bit higher than they are today. That what we're seeing now in the BBB yield market is that yields are pushing higher, and there isn't a great deal of evidence just yet to say that they've encountered resistance or that they're going to. That when you look at 5-year yields on the US Treasury, that they've gone from the lower side to the upper side of a first step above the base. And if they're going to encounter resistance, then it would be in the next 10 basis points. When we take a big step back and look at the global economy, well then, the expansion has resulted in extremely low interest rates, and those low interest rates have made money available to just about anybody with an idea. What it really means is that we're getting an accelerating pace of technological innovation, which is just incredibly exciting. It's also helping to bring to market technologies that have been maturing for a long time. That the NASDAQ bubble of the 1990s was as much about biotechnology as it was about media and the internet, but that it has taken an additional decade for the biotechnology to really reach commercialization, and that's now happening. So even though people are worried about the stock market and interest rates, the biotechnology sector remains a stalwart, and the process of consolidation that's been evident over the last 3 days isn't really anything other than an unwinding of what has been really a very impressive performance over the last 2 months, and that the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact. The Biogen, Celgene, and Amgen all found support in the region of their respective 200-day moving averages over the last week. And that's exactly what you would expect to happen in the context of a medium-term bull market. Well, biotechnology alone isn't just what's going on. Well, virtual reality was really developed by NASA over 30 years ago and is now reaching commercial utility with the release of virtual reality headbands for gamers. Well, when one thinks about the potential for remote meetings, for remote shopping experiences, then this is something that probably has legs and could run from here. The announcement just 2 months ago that for the first time ever that people have figured out how to artificially produce photosynthesis is just an incredible innovation in terms of energy. And it means that the pullback that we've had in energy is really the realization of the unconventional oil and gas boom. But that's already now in the price. And when we start to look forward, that the innovation that we're seeing in solar technology and the application of solar technology to an increasingly wide number of additional aspects of where energy is used mean that the prospect of oil prices surging back up is becoming increasingly distant, and that it would be predicated on a war or conflagration originating in a major producing country. We can't rule that out, that the divergence between countries where they have improving governance and those that have deteriorating governance is becoming increasingly stark. And the bull market in commodities really papered over a lot of cracks in countries that do not have improving standards of governance. Well, nobody was really worried about Russia or about Russian ambitions beyond its own borders until oil prices started falling. The corruption that has been just ingrained in Brazilian politics for decades survived an additional decade because of high commodity prices. Well, you didn't have the just total deterioration of the status quo in terms of the Middle East until oil prices started coming down. Well, those are the stories that make headlines. What make fewer headlines is the fact that Nigeria now has a reform-minded president, that India remains on a reform trajectory. Well, Widodo in Indonesia might not have the same majority as Modi, but he definitely has the same reform type zeal. When we look at Europe, that this process of austerity is just robbing the area of growth, but that quantitative easing could help to ameliorate that fairly well. That the countries that have been able to embrace the need for reform are doing particularly well. Ireland might be a small market, but it is certainly performing in here. And countries that have been unable to embrace a reform trajectory, like Greece, remain languishing here. In an environment where you don't have commodity price inflation and you do not have just a steady flow of money for free, well, the countries that can reform and the countries that embrace the need for reform will outperform, and those that don't won't. Well, the benefit right now is that it is the major population centers of the world where you do have improving governance, and that's really important, that it offers the potential for hundreds of millions of people to enter the global economy and achieve their productive capacity. The fact that we have accelerating technological innovation is wonderful, but the fact that governance is improving, which is allowing availability of that technology to reach ever more people, is perhaps even more important. When you have this environment where we have very low energy prices, or at least competitive energy prices, technological innovation and availability and improving governance in major population centers, well, then that's what you can predicate the argument for a major bull market on. The normalization of interest rates has always been the hurdle over which we need to get, and there is a risk that we're going to move into a more choppy environment as interest rates eventually begin to rise. And it means that from the perspective of a medium-term investor, that monitoring the consistency of trends is going to be more important than ever. The relative strength of the US dollar is an additional consideration that we really didn't have to worry about over the last decade. The dollar was trending lower, and it was just enormously beneficial for just about everywhere else. Well, particularly the emerging markets. And what US investors in particular were getting was capital market currency and yield for their as a benefit for investing abroad. Well, that argument is much more muddied now because not only is the dollar firm against the euro, which is probably the weakest currency in the world, but that it is strengthening against just about everything. And that's a really big deal. It means that the yield has to be higher, the capital market appreciation has to be better in order to really encourage US dollar investors abroad. And it's pretty much the same thing for other currencies that are strong relative to emerging markets. This isn't something that's likely to change in the short term. In fact, the demand for hedged vehicles has increased fairly substantially. That's likely to remain the case for as long as interest rates are low and the cost of hedging is cheap. But we're likely to see that currency market volatility is here with us to stay, and that investors are going to have a view on the currency as well as the potential for capital market appreciation before they invest abroad. And it means that you probably have to look at a number of different charts when you're assessing the consistency of the trend. Well, for example, at the moment, New Zealand has seen its dollar trending lower for much of the last year, and particularly over the last couple of weeks. Well, in nominal terms, that's helped to support the stock market. In US dollar terms, the stock market is breaking down. The Malaysian ringgit is back testing the lows of its 10-year range, and back to the area where it was pegged against the US dollar previously. Well, in nominal terms, the stock market has top formation characteristics, but in US dollar terms, it's already broken down. And it's the same thing with Indonesia, that the weakening of the currency is tantamount to removing a source of potential demand from the market, that a foreign investor will be investing all week, all month, all year, as long as they're making money. And when they stop making money, then they have to reduce their positions. Well, this isn't something that's going to change. It's going to be with us for a long time. And it's probably going to require concerted central bank efforts to stabilize the currency markets back to the kind of environment that we had for a long time. Well, Japan is the most activist in terms of depreciating its currency, and the stock market is responding. And Japan is at a position right now where the TOPIX index, it's not the one that people generally tend to look at for the simple reason that it's not where you have the you don't have futures on the TOPIX. The TOPIX is the really big index. Well, there have been highs in the region of 1700, and 1700 has been pretty much a glass ceiling since 1993, and the price at present is 1667 as of today's close. Well, the market may encounter resistance in this area. There's only 30 points away from the big round 1700. The fact that it has rallied so incredibly powerful would suggest that we're going to get at least some consolidation. But a sustained move above 1700 would suggest that we're back in new secular bull market territory, that the devaluation of the currency has been enough to reignite interest in the stock market. There was a news story this week that some state agency in Japan was saying that property prices really should be higher from here, and that the prices that they are at right now isn't reflective of their true value. And perhaps more important is that the banking sector is now moving to a position of outperformance, and that's really important. That the banking sector has pretty much lagged, and that it's now starting to pick up pace. Well, this is sort of exciting here that there is the potential that we get some short-term consolidation, but that this could be a major market on the cusp of completing a very, very long period of total underperformance. And that would suggest that we're still in the early stages of what could be a particularly long-term bull market in Japan, that the peak in both the Nikkei and the TOPIX was in 1989. And that feels like a long time ago. Well, with currency market volatility, the remonetization of precious metals in the eyes of investors works both ways. That when the US dollar was weak, then the relative value of gold was pretty competitive. Well, the dollar is firmed up enough that gold is no longer the go-to currency of choice, and it doesn't have a yield. Well, when foreign exchange people tend to look at their costs and they look at interest rate differentials. Well, when interest rates were zero and everyone was anticipating deflation, well, that's incredibly positive for gold. Well, when that starts to change, when currencies start to get stronger, there's an increasing popularity for gold. You don't really start to get into the just gold fever until you have a problem with inflation and currencies are no longer seen as a store of value. But we're certainly not there right now. That fiat currencies have, particularly the US dollar, have been weak for a long time, and that they do represent a source of value in the short term. Well, over the long term, we know that fiat currencies are a terrible store of value, but like any currency, that if you're going to define gold as a currency, then you have to think that it is going to have positions of outperformance and underperformance. And if that's true of gold, it's true of any currency. Well, the dollar is coming off a very low level, and gold prices have been pretty inert. But platinum prices are breaking down, palladium prices are breaking down, and one might argue that that is because of the threat to their industrial use from electric cars, but that's unlikely to be a short-term consideration. And really, what gold needs is a catalyst, and right now it's not evident as to exactly what that catalyst is going to be. But it needs to get above $1,200 to really defray potential that it could break down and follow both platinum and palladium lower. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish a good weekend to all of you.